I do see a lot of entrepreneurs stuck in a monthly cash flow mindset. So I'm usually trying to coach people into thinking annually, thinking bigger picture. Because if you're thinking about your cash flow on a month-to-month basis, you're kind of living and dying by how much cash is coming in. You're not thinking like a business person. You're thinking like a freelancer.
Yes.
And that can really hinder your growth.
Este é o podcast do Tiago Faria. Para mais episódios, vá a tiagofaria.pt.
Olá, Tiago Faria, Tiago Faria pelo BT. Bem-vindos ao episódio número 40 do aqui do podcast do Tiago. Hoje tenho mais uma convidada do outro lado do Atlântico. Ela chama-se Pia Silva, tem um apelido quase português. Ela ajuda empreendedores a criarem negócios de serviços sustentáveis e que lhes permita ter uma vida tranquila e livre, que no fundo é o que toda a gente quer, especialmente empreendedores aqui de Portugal e de empresas pequenas e médias, que querem realmente ter uma vida mais sossegada. Ela é autora do livro Badass Your Brand. É uma palestrante e consultora. Hello, Pia. How are you? Welcome to my channel.
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
It's awesome, too, that you took your time to be here. We scheduled this in advance and you arrived before time. I love this. So I make a quick intro in Portuguese. Maybe you understood a couple of words, but...
Badass your brand.
Badass your brand. But for those who don't know you in this side of the Atlantic, would you mind telling us a bit about yourself, who you are, what you do?
Sure. So Pia Silva, I own a company called Worst of All Design with my husband and partner.
Husband,
we build.
Wow.
Yes. Awesome. Oh, yeah. I don't always tell people that. We build badass brands for 1 to 3 person service businesses, and we do it in 1 to 3 day intensives. We have this very unique model. It allows us to be super profitable and work and make all of our money in very short amounts of time, giving us lots of time and freedom to do other things like this podcast and write a book and enjoy life. So because of that, in the last few years, I've also spent a lot of that free time teaching other people how to build businesses and brands like that, businesses and brands that are profitable, that stand out, and that give you the life of freedom and flexibility that I think every single entrepreneur wants.
That's what I was saying in the introduction. So this episode will be very, very interesting for most of my audience. But I also like to go back to make a flashback with my guests to know what kind of child were you? Where did you grow up? What were your dreams, aspirations? What is something related to this? Were you always having this entrepreneurial tendencies? Can you go back a bit and share?
Sure. Well, I'm born and raised in New York City. So I live in Brooklyn now. I grew up in the Lower East Side in Manhattan. I am a townie, like we call them. Townies. New York City townie. So I'm New Yorker to the core. That's where my intensity, I think, comes from.
Yes.
I don't know that I always wanted to be an entrepreneur, but I always wanted to be in charge. I didn't know what I wanted to be. I just knew that I wanted to be running whatever I was doing. So when I got into my 20s, I tried out a few things and landed here. I think this was inevitable because there's one thing I knew when I was in college, and it was that I was never going to work for someone else. So I didn't know what it looked like. I just knew I was not going to be applying to jobs.
Wow.
I remember specifically thinking that when I was in classes where I wasn't doing well. I was like, well, who cares? No one's going to see this transcript anyway, because there is no way I'm applying for a job. But I was a really serious dancer. So I studied flamenco, salsa, ballet, jazz, hip hop, tap. Oh, wow. I did everything. And I think it's oddly related because dancing or something like sports, a lot of people do, it's requires a lot of dedication and showing up when you don't want to and pushing through stuff and having that kind of fierce determination that I think translates very well into entrepreneurship.
Yeah, I was struggling. I was checking on your LinkedIn to check if she had any jobs right after university. But then there you go. You didn't have any job. You just jumped straight to your own risk, your own experiences. And can you tell me a bit about that beginning of your journey? Was it 2006 where you... started
your
career,
well,
basically?
I did gigs, so I didn't go straight into this business. I tried kind of doing on my own some nonprofit fundraising. I was very interested,
yes,
and I studied microfinance and social entrepreneurship in college. So I was an economics major, and I was very interested in microfinance, small, if you don't know, like lending small amounts of money to women in rural places to help them build their own businesses. So actually it was very connected to entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. It was just from the nonprofit sector. And I got very frustrated with that very quickly, not interested in nonprofits, very inefficient. I'm all about efficiency. So I said, I cannot handle this. I got to come at that from a different, maybe I have to make a lot of money and just donate to this or invest in it or something, but this is not going to fly for me. I took my hand at real estate and tried to be a real estate agent. Again, that's like it's a gig. It's your own business. So,
yes.
I was not interested in real estate. Somebody said, hey, you'd be good at this. And they explained it. And I was like, I'll give it a go. So I did that for 2 years. Pretty soul sucking in New York City. I stopped. And then I just was kind of hired consultant like, you know, by people that knew me and friends of friends. Oh, this person's starting a business. You need some help. Pia is the kind of person who can help you. Like, she knows how to figure shit out. That's who people know me as.
Got it.
So I did that. I helped open a cafe and a pizzeria. And I mean, I didn't know anything about it, but just, you know, that's what entrepreneurship is. It's okay. We have a challenge. Figure it out. And then eventually when I was with my now husband, we were engaged. He's an artist and he was a freelance designer, and it was 2000. He was doing freelance gigs, and at a certain point I was like, God, they're not paying you very much. I feel like the two of us could do this better. I feel like I could get us clients instead of you going into somebody's office and getting paid $20 an hour. And that's how we started. And the goal was just maintain. We were like, if the two of us can just make as much money as we're making now, which wasn't a lot, with our own clients out of our house, we will be so happy. And that's how it started.
That's incredible. And it's magical when it happens as a couple, right? I feel that there must be such something magical. Unfortunately, I couldn't convince my wife to. but I know many couples that are successful doing their own gigs, and it's really impressive. Congratulations.
It's work.
It's work.
Don't worry. If anyone tells you it's easy to work with your partner, they're lying. It doesn't mean it's not worth it.
It's exactly. But before we go to the worst of all designs, what lessons did you take from those initial gigs that you took that you could apply later on? What something that stands out that you would like to share?
Yeah, everything I did. I always tell people who are, my younger cousin is in her 20s, and when she's lost and trying to figure out what she's going to be a major in, she calls me so I can tell her, it doesn't matter. Just do stuff you like. Try things. It literally, to me, it doesn't matter. It's all, the lessons are there for the taking. So try things, you know, see what you don't, it's important to see what you don't like as much as what you do like. But for me, those first experiences out of school and even in school when I was running things, various groups and stuff, it was mostly this figure it out. I mean, I think it's a muscle to feel confident that you can figure things out and that you can go after something you don't know how to do and you can learn how to do it. That's how people learn how to do things. And I think a lot of people don't necessarily think that all the time. They think, oh, I don't know how to do that, so I won't do it. So I was lucky enough to be in a couple of situations like real estate where I knew nothing about it and I got kind of, I knew so little about it. I didn't even know how little I knew about it. And I got thrown in and I had to figure it out. And that's what entrepreneurship is the entire way. I'm still figuring it out because there's always another step. So it's just building that muscle to be comfortable with the fact that there's always more to know and you're never gonna just know it all.
Absolutely. Completely agree with that. It's really good tips. So yeah, in 2008, right, you co-founded Worst of All Design. First of all, you have to tell me, who chose that awesome name? Worst of All.
Well, so my husband is Dutch and his last name is Wasterval.
Ah, got it. It's a play of words.
And Worst of All was his college nickname. He was a painter, artist, stoner, snowboarder. So worst of all. So that was just the name. I mean, I just inherited the name. It was, wasn't really a discussion. That was already the name he was freelancing under.
It might really intrigue potential clients, right? Oh, okay. Gets well, curious.
It was very authentic to
yes,
us.
Yes, exactly.
But it ended up, we call it having legs. It grew into being, having so much meaning. So it represents a lot of the things that we do, which is to just, you know, you have to be your thing all the way, and you have to be your brand as opposed to saying it. So what's more powerful? Lots of branding agencies will say, we help you stand out from the crowd, which yes. is, you know, okay, really? Like, everybody says that. So how do you do that? So to me, saying, worst of all design, it's already standing out. We're letting you know that that's what we do without telling you. And to me, that is a powerful and critical piece of a very strong brand.
Absolutely. And could you describe to us the 3 first months before, not the first months, actually before you co-founded the company?
Yeah.
What were the main obstacles that you had to surpass during that stage, the before, the day one, you know?
Well, the before 3 months are very interesting. So the 3 months before we started our business, we were actually living on a farm in the Caribbean with no electricity.
Wow.
In the winter before, we had been freelancing and we, you know, various things. He was freelance designing. I was freelance. I don't remember. And we saw this thing called woofing, willing to work on or worldwide organic farms. And they have them all over the world. There are farms all over the world where you can connect with them and you can go work on the farm and then they'll let you live on the land mm-hmm. and eat off the land. Yes. So we were like, that sounds awesome. Let's try that. Let's see what it's like to live without money. So we saved up $10,000 and we took a one-way trip there and we lived on this farm in Tortola in the British Virgin Islands for a few months, which was a very interesting experience. No clock, no computer, no phone, nothing, just completely off the grid. And obviously being off the grid, we had a lot of time to read and write and talk and think. And we hitchhiked everywhere and we were just walking for out. Like that's all we did. Just hitchhike to a beach, take hours to get there, hang out there, hitchhike back. It was very slow. It was the opposite of New York City. And that's where we decided, hey, we should go back to Brooklyn and start a business. And I think it really unintentionally set us up for success because when we came home, we were used to living off of nothing.
We were
used to living with nothing. We were like living in this lean-to on this farm, cooking out of one pot with a fire I had to make every day. We got so used to that coming home, we could get by on almost nothing. And it felt luxurious that we just had hot water and a bed. So that was a really nice way to start. And I think most people do the opposite. They leave a job where it's cushy and then they go into this very uncomfortable thing where now they've got to tighten their belt. That's really hard. So I didn't mean to do it that way. But that I highly recommend go deprive yourself for a few months before you start your business so that you're like really ready for the struggle.
Deprivation for 3 months. That's a great tip. Why not? Yeah. You will suffer less when you start.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what I want to go now. I love making this like this by stages so that people that want to start their businesses know what to expect. Could you walk us through the first day of the conference? Like, what did you do that day, and how did you feel?
Well, I don't remember the exact day. I know we came home with moleskins full of drawings of what our website was going to look like. Like, Steve, designed the website in our notebooks.
Yes.
Websites were different back then, too. So, you know, he got on the websites, and I went straight to Craigslist. And I just started. That's where I got our first clients for the first few months was just Craigslist. I didn't know what else to do. That was the only thing I knew. So that's what I did. I just trolled Craigslist
Pure
all day, every
cold
day.
Calling, yeah?
No cold calling. Just looking for looking for jobs posted on Craigslist for design gigs and then answering them.
Got it. Okay. That's awesome. That's really cool. And so in 2014, right? Mm-hmm. Actually, no, let's go back a bit before that. I want to know also, what were the main mistakes that you feel you made during the initial stages of that company with your husband that turned out major lessons now for your life?
The main mistakes? I mean, everything. Well, yeah, I had no idea what I was doing. So everything, you know, I don't know. We were in the mode of, we just need cash. We don't care mm-hmm. how much we work. It doesn't matter. We are just looking to pay our bills.
Okay.
That is the complete opposite of what I recommend and how I run my business now.
Yes.
But I will say that we were also very new. Like, Steve was a really good designer. I mean, he was already a good designer, but that's not being a business. Exactly. We didn't know anything about charging, project management. We had no systems or process. We weren't worth more. Even if his designs were great, we weren't worth more. We needed to learn and create all of these processes. So as much as like we did everything wrong,
you learn by doing, right?
I mean, that's the only way I know how to learn is learn by doing. And obviously, like watching people, reading, ingesting information. I feel like back then there wasn't as much information online the way there is now about businesses. So I was more like reading books.
Through books. So you didn't touch any of your network, like get any mentorship or nothing like that?
No. I didn't have any entrepreneurial people in my world.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't. Yeah. Sure. I think my dad worked for himself, but if I had had any like entrepreneurs that were in my inner circle, I probably would have become an entrepreneur earlier, but I kind of fell into it. You know what I mean? I think I would have gone right for it. It just wasn't something that was talked about in my world. I don't have any friends from college or high school who are entrepreneurs. None. So, I wish that things would have been different. I didn't even consider having a mentor. That's how little that's how much I was disconnected from the entrepreneurial world.
That's really something. You started from nothing, from scratch. Absolutely.
Just like blind.
Amazing.
Hustling my tail off.
The tail off. Yes. Until in 2014, started your own personal brand. Can you tell us how and why you decided to do it? And what was
my personal brand?
Yeah, your personal brand, the Pia Silver.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I really didn't launch my personal brand until 2016.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, and the reason was that's when I was getting ready to publish my book. And there was a moment about 6 months before I published my book, when it was still being written, that I was thinking about the marketing for it. And I said, if I really want people to read this, then I need to be out there. Like, I need my face to be present. I think it's much...
How was that struggle? It's very important because many, many entrepreneurs struggle with that. I don't want to show myself. I'm afraid of what people think about myself.
I also hate photos. I mean, I've grown... It's so funny, right? Because if you look me up, like, there's photos of me all over the place. You would think I love photos. You won't find a photo of me before 2016 because even though Facebook was big, like, I didn't post photos of myself on Facebook or anything. I just really wasn't on social media or... really didn't like just photos of myself or anything. But I really wanted people to read my book. That was really important to me. And so I thought, I just know that it's going to be much easier and much faster for people to connect with me and read this book. If they know me, if they're connecting with me, or else it's just a faceless idea. And then I realized, Steve, this was really his idea. Because I did talk to a publicist who told me not to put my face on my book. And she said it should look like, you know, Malcolm Gladwell's book, or like, she like showed me all these books and she said, you know, it's got a little illustration and nothing else. That's what your book should look like. Cause that's the kind of book you're writing. And Steve was like, no, we're building you as a thought leader. These are your ideas. We want people to know who you are. We want people to connect with you. We need to put your face on this book, which is the opposite of what I had been this whole time. And we just said, yeah, we're not going to listen to these experts. We're going to do it our way because that's how we've always done it. It's worked out so far. So that's when I really started in preparation for the book launch. I hired a photographer. I did this crazy photo shoot. Then I had all these photos and I just started blasting them online and building my, I opened my Instagram account. I opened my Twitter account and I just like, it was like on. And that's when I started.
And did you also start doing video by the time or first started with?
No, I don't think I did video for years. I don't think I did video until, maybe 2018.
Got it. And okay, so you felt for yourself it was important to show your face, but did you know already how important it is to have a personal brand and creating content online, or was it something you developed with time?
I don't think that I thought about it in that context. There was a very specific reason, and it was this book. Although I will say the impetus for the book was, I've got these ideas and I really want to share them. And I really think they can help a lot of people. So that's why I wrote the book. But then once I had the book, once I was almost done with the book, it was like, well, I need them to read it in order for them to get the ideas. So how am I going to get the book in their hands? And then it was the connection of, oh, I really need to be out there. I think only after I experienced how powerful that was, did I start to really intentionally think, oh, I'm really building a personal brand here, like a thought leadership brand. And there's a lot of power in that. And there's a lot of things you can do with that once you build it. And I'm a huge advocate of it now, because even though we built a business brand, Worst of All Design, it was so much faster to build my personal brand because people connect with a face in a way that they almost can't connect with a business. I mean, people love our business brand, but they don't. And they do. They are fans of it for different reasons, but it's not the same as connecting with, Pia. It's just not the same.
Yeah, exactly. There's much more emotional involvement in it, right? So it's completely different. What do you think? So based on all your experience now going through all these creation of businesses and how to do it and how to not do it, what are the main mistakes you see business owners making at the beginning of their adventures? Like what are they doing early on that will make their lives harder, right?
Yeah. Big thing I see most entrepreneurs do in the beginning is focus their energy in the wrong place. So I think a lot of business owners start by focusing too much, you're going to laugh, on the brand, on the logo, on the website before they've closed clients. They think they need to get it perfect. They think they've got to figure out what their angle is and all of that. It's not that that stuff isn't important. It's just that before you've had any clients, like you're going to evolve once you have experience. And I think that a lot of entrepreneurs, because it's easier and it's more fun to focus on what does my logo look like? What does my website look like? Oh, I can't get clients without a website and logo. Yeah. That's an excuse. My advice, if you're first starting out, just go get a couple clients. Do whatever you need to do to go work with somebody. I'm anti working for free, but if you have to get a first client and work for free, do it because you need to build that skill. And you need to work with people. You need to build some momentum process. You need to learn who you like to work with. And then based on that experience, you can really build a brand. And that's actually why we won't take startups as clients. You have to have had a chunk of clients for us to be able to build a really strong strategy that will actually work for your branding and messaging, because it's got to be people you've actually worked with. We can't just make it up. I mean, it won't be right if you make it up.
And about those that are your clients, that are more mature companies, what are the mistakes you see them? What are the main mistakes that you see them committing?
More the mature regularly? Companies? Yeah, I mean, I think clients, or clients, businesses, they're my clients. I think a lot of businesses don't, and this is very easy, they kind of get stuck in a way of doing things. So just like in the beginning, you really want to hustle, you got to get some clients. You want to start adjusting your offerings and your pricing as you grow. And a lot of businesses don't do that. So for example, if you've been in business for 5 years or 2 years, if you've been in business for 2 years and you're still charging hourly and you don't have a process and every client that comes to you, you write a custom proposal for, then you are stuck in startup mode, you know, but you've been in business for 2 years. So you are in a position to evolve into the next stage of business. And one of the most important things for entrepreneurs, any business to be profitable, and this is very true for service businesses, I work with service businesses, is that you have to have some sort of standardization. You can't find profit in customization. It has to be standard. You can have customization within a process, but you have to have a standard process or else it's inefficient. And inefficiency, when really your whole business is your time, is not going to cut it. That's why everyone, that's why so many entrepreneurs are so overworked and underpaid, because they're inefficient. Exactly. Maybe that's what it is.
Yes, exactly. That's the point I wanted to touch more upon is, what do you think majority of business owners, that they cannot get rid of that daily hustle? And why can't they change that chip to focus more on the long-term version to give them the life that they want? You know, why do you think they're stuck there? Are they afraid of if they leave the boat, it's like, oh, everything will crumble down? What do you think?
I mean, it's probably mostly a mindset thing. I think it might be, I do see a lot of entrepreneurs stuck in a monthly cash flow mindset. So I'm usually trying to coach people into thinking annually, thinking bigger picture. Because if you're thinking about your cash flow on a month-to-month basis, you're kind of living and dying by how much cash is coming in. You're not thinking like a business person. You're thinking like a freelancer. Yes. And that can really hinder your growth because, apologize for the, can you hear the, my neighbors?
Fine.
Oh, no, good. It really hinders your growth if you aren't able to invest time or money in growing your business. And it's very hard to invest time or money in growing your business if you're operating on a monthly basis.
Yes, exactly. And how to counter that, based on what you call it, how do you become then a badass business? You implement processes, right?
You really narrow your focus. In as many ways as possible. So you can narrow your focus in target market. You can narrow and niche in terms of your offerings. You know, like we only offer one service, basically. We have two steps to our service. It's the only way we work. If you don't fit exactly into that, then you're not a client for us. And then obviously personality. I mean, that's badass branding right there. It's like, what are you all about and how do you own that all the way? So we are particularly contrarian in our brand, right? We're badass brands without the BS. We're worst of all design. Like we're very in your face. That doesn't have to be, that's not the only way to be badass. Badass can be, we're super nerdy, you know, we're very anal and super nerdy. Like that can be your badass brand. It just means that you are so anal and so nerdy. You are the epitome of anal and nerdy. Like that's what I'm going for here. Take whatever that thing is and blast it on a billboard and be it so extreme. That is super badass.
Yeah, exactly. Because the point is not to please everyone, right? Which is what most people want to do usually.
Right.
It's to selectively please the people that will actually connect with your message and repel the rest, right?
Exactly. And most people, it's actually, you just brought up a good point. It's very counterintuitive because as humans, we want people to like us.
Yes.
So this is the opposite. I don't need anyone but my ideal clients to love me. In fact, the more other people don't like me, the more my ideal clients will love me. And yes. I say on my homepage, in order to be loved by some, you have to be okay being misunderstood or disliked by others. And if you can really internalize that, like that sounds cool, but if you can really internalize that, it's going to take your business really far.
That is so hard, right? To ignore the trolls and the bad comments online. Most people struggle so much with that. And maybe that's why you don't get to the threshold, right, of, you know, growing your business even further, is because of being afraid of
showing your truth. Mm-hmm. Most people are afraid. And that's also your opportunity, because if you do it, most of your competitors aren't going to. So it's like, to me, it's there for yours for the taking.
And also it makes you unique. You distinguishes yourself in your pride. Nobody can compare with yourself because it's you, it's yourself, it's your personality.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think most people say they want to stand out and be unique. Who doesn't? I want to stand out and be unique. But if they really understand what that means, most people don't want to. So it's like a disconnect between saying I want to stand out and be unique and what it actually takes. Oh, but I don't want to do that. Well, that's what it is. Well, that's what it means. So it's like if you can rectify the two, then you'll be successful.
Brilliant, Pia. So based on all we said today, what is the one thing a business owner can take out of this interview today and start implementing right now this week? You know, what could you
select? Yeah. I would say find the thing about you that kind of tickles you, or that you know about yourself that you love, that maybe your clients love, and see how you can be 10 times more extreme about it. How can you pull that thing out about you and multiply it by 10? Because that's, and then only do that, because that's really what a successful brand is. It's super simple and clear, and it goes all the way with its idea. So that's what I would encourage you to do. Like, dig deep. What is that thing about you, and how can your whole business be about that?
And it's also important to be consistent with that, right? Like,
yeah, and then never shut up about it.
Never
repeat it up. Get tired of hearing yourself say badass like I am.
That's awesome, Pia. That's perfect. We're getting quickly cruising to the end of the interview. I'd just love to know if in the past 5 years, did you create any habit, new habit that drastically improved your life? Do you remember anything that stands out?
Oh, hell yeah. My life is totally different than it was 5 years ago. Are you kidding? Because 5 years ago...
It was before everything.
Just about 5 years ago, I was still hustling in agency mode. So let's see. One of the biggest things I did was change the way that I approach my time. So I wrote an article, if you want to check on, if you just search Pia Silva Forbes 9 to 5, this article will come up. I call it Spain Brain. We developed this way of working where we basically only allow ourselves 25 hours a week. And we implemented a couple of processes to ensure that we would only work 25 hours a week. So, you know, just being really diligent about outsourcing everything we can, being really diligent about knowing exactly what we're going to do each day, keeping goals, keeping lists, so that no time is wasted. And we did that before when it was just the two of us. We did that so we could only work in the afternoons, and then we had a baby, and now we only work a couple days a week. So we get to spend, you know, most of our time with our son. So just being super intentional about when you're working, that you're only doing high level stuff, outsourcing low level stuff, and knowing that you really don't have to work 40 plus hours a week to be. I'm much more effective and create much more now than I ever did when I was working 40 hours a week.
In short bursts, completely focused, concentrated.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And always having a plan before I come into the office.
Okay. Okay. That's a really good tip. Awesome. Hard to implement for most people, but it really is the way to have a, it's a habit. Exactly.
It's a habit.
All habits are hard to implement.
Yes.
And who do you follow online for advice and inspiration on any area? It could be entrepreneurship, marketing, whatever. In which way have they influenced you?
That's a good question. I'm not a big follower.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why.
You're a creator now.
I mean, it's not like I don't look, you know. Obviously, when I'm doing something specific, I'll look at a couple of people. But I've never really avidly followed people for the only reason that I like don't want to be influenced by what they do. Is that weird? I don't, like I said, I'm kind of a fall on my face and figure it out. And that way I can really own it, as opposed to kind of like, oh, this person's doing this, so I'm going to do that. You know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, the people that come to mind are just the big ones. Gary V. I was watching him recently. Mr. Like Gary he's a v. nut. He's a nut. But
you watched him live. Wow, that's awesome.
I watched one of his. Yeah, I watched one of his videos. I mean, he's a nut, but he's inspirational. Like
he's a nut. Like
he doesn't take shit from anybody.
Yes, exactly. I've been trying to get him on the podcast. I'm going to send the 10th email and 20 messages.
Well, he says.
Yes.
Well, he says, offer him something. That's what he says.
Exactly. Well, I'm offering him viewership.
That's true.
No, but I'll keep trying. I'm sure I'll get it one day. Maybe in 20 years when he buys the New York Jets. Who knows?
you should message him every single day. You got to do something extreme for Gary.
I know.
You got to just be calling on him.
Absolutely. I'll get there. And if you had to choose a book, which would you recommend, and why would you recommend that book?
So many books. One that I feel like a lot of people don't hear about, although maybe you have, is The Big Leap by Guy Hendrickson, Gay Hendrickson. Have you ever heard that book?
I haven't read it.
And I actually don't even know if it's The Big Leap or The Great Leap because it's on my Kindle, so I never actually see the cover. I've read this book multiple times. It's so good. And the reason it's good is because it's about how much we limit ourselves and our success without knowing it. So as we are hitting our he calls it upper limit in ourselves.
It's the big leap, yeah.
The big leap. As you are growing and succeeding, we actually do things unintentionally to stop ourselves from having success. And he has all these different ways to see that you're doing it. And it's amazing when you read this, like there's no way that you won't notice things that you're doing, including things you aren't meaning to do. I mean, I get a migraine every time something good is happening, like my body is like trying to stop me from doing it. So it's incredible because it allows you to see that you're breaking through to something bigger. I find that very inspirational and a great, that's why I reread a lot of books. I reread that book constantly because it's a great reminder.
Great tip. And it's something no one ever recommended in this podcast.
Good.
Thank you for that. I read that. Pia, we reached the end of it. So could you share with us, how can people know more about you?
Sure. Well, you can follow me on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook. Pia loves your biz, B-I-Z, because I truly do. Or you can go to my website, piasilva.com, and right there on the homepage somewhere, there's a little mini course about pricing your services for freedom. So I'm all about freedom, and it's all about knowing the price you need to charge to get that freedom. So I have this like calculator and little course that you can take for free. So you should definitely check that out.
That's awesome. It's pretty easy to find you online. I think there's not many Pia Silvas, and your face shows everywhere. So
thank you.
Good job. Pia, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
You're super fun, entertaining, smart, and you shared a lot of value here. Thank you so much for your time. And talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Bom, foi então o final do episódio 2040. Espero que tenha gostado. Acho que foi espetacular. Tivemos aqui uma conversa muito interessante. Se gostou, por favor, deixe o seu gosto, subscreva o canal, faça todos os sociais para partilhar aqui o podcast com mais pessoas. Muito obrigado pelo seu tempo. Até à próxima.